Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan and I am an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no fees or dues for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11. Please welcome our panelists this evening. We have Kyle and David. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And I will read the first paragraph on page 85, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. So, page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. All right.
I'm David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
Thanks for asking me to be here tonight, David. So my sobriety date is December 2nd. 2008, and I promise, by the way, I'm following along with the big book on my phone. I'm not playing Angry Birds right now. To explain my experience with the 11th step, I'll go back to just a little bit of how I drank. I started drinking when I was 12. You know, it was the first time I was getting drunk, actually, with my friends in the 7th grade. You know, we got into some you know, taking liquor from my parents' liquor cabinet, or, you know, sometimes actually mixing it all. Like, I didn't want to take too much from it, so I put little bits of it into a water bottle from every single bottle they had in there. So I'd get this weird brownish, sometimes purplish bottle of, you know, crazy stuff. We'd drink that and, you know, mess around. That's where it started for me. And it got to the point that at the end of my drinking, I was drinking in binges, sprees, benders, whatever you want to call it. My friends called them rampages. When I would do that, my name would be Party Monster. You know, when I switched into that, that's just how people knew me, because I would go from being a normal guy to just, you know, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde example of just turning into a crazy person. So I would, you know, emerge from these sprees remorseful. I would feel horrible. I would be I would swear off alcohol for the rest of my life. Always. So, you know, basically, if depending on which week or month you talk to me, I was either, you know, sober forever. I wouldn't, you know, ever even drink coffee or anything, do anything. I got to be totally, you know, clean and sober for the rest of my life. Or I would be, you know, drinking everything that's in sight, or, you know, using whatever someone had that day if we were short on alcohol. So that's the way it was. And I always would leave these things. I would go on these benders and be just filled with guilt, filled with shame. I would be just ruminating about it, obsessing about everything I'd done, to the point that I could barely get my normal work done during the day. I was just obsessed with all these things I had just messed up, and people I'd angered, and things I'd stolen. And I was just unable to function. There was a moment when I was 17, I tried to kill myself. I drove a car, you know, 65 miles an hour into this construction site with no seatbelt on, and ran into a big sort of steel structure in there, and was fine. And that didn't get me sober, though. It took me a while of doing more things like that before I came around and got sober in 2008. But in this section right here, where I think that's the most important thing for me, is things like, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. And that idea of acknowledging the past, you know, not wishing to shut the door on the past, but still acknowledging that our past is a big part of our asset that we have for people, other people coming in, and reflecting on what we've done wrong, what we can do better, without letting it bring us down, but actually turning it into something, being proactive, doing something about it, and moving forward. And that's huge. That's the biggest difference between when I was drinking to how I am now, that with things like the 11th step, the 4th and the 5th and all that, I can turn things that I did in the past into positive things that help me grow, rather than things that just hold me back. And that's the sort of the one piece of the 11th that really stands out to me, and isn't that piece there, so I'll pass.
Thanks, David. My name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 2nd, 2011. I do have a home group, and I haven't been there in a hot minute. So I'm such a bad AA. I remember getting drunk and, like, going into, you know, I always wanted that next party, that next thing. And I was always way too excited to, like, control anything in my life, but I desperately wanted that control. And I desperately wanted to have control of everything, but then, like, you know, once I got drunk, I didn't want to have control of anything. And like, that was, like, that awesome release that I had, and there was just mixed emotions with everything. And I just remember very clearly going home after being just really wasted, and I'd look myself in the mirror, and I would just curse at myself. And it was just this immense self-hate that was just brooding over the day constantly. And there have been times in sobriety where that, you know, I'm like wondering, when do I get happy? You know, when does this thing kick in? When does it work? You know, and this is a vigorous program. This is very vigorous. And I've got to, you know, there's many times where I forget how bad it was, so that I know, you know, I gotta put some real work into this thing. And so that leads me, you know, to step 11. It keeping conscious contact with a power greater than ourselves. And so it gets into it, and you know, fortunately, there's very specific direction, and it actually emphasizes that it would be easy to be vague about this matter. And I don't know, I just know through my sobriety, there's many times people have been, well, what's meditation? Well, let's pontificate about that and really think about what that is and whatever. It actually gives clear direction of what to do, of like how to meditate, right, of what it is. So anyway, let's get into it. So constructively reviewing our day, and it has these questions that it almost seems like it goes through, like, what, you know, do we owe an amends? Do we, what, you know, what did we do? What could we have done better? And again, you know, just as David was saying, is, you know, that worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. You know, that is some intense stuff that I will burden myself with my own self-hate. And I will carry that around. And that was, like, you know, one of those things that I liked to use as an excuse to drink. Even though I drank no matter what, you know, that, and it says, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. And that's big for me. Cause I really, you know, in my drinking, I really focused in on that self-hate. If you didn't like me, or if I didn't get something from you, and I, you know, in my drinking, I was just like, this is it. If I'm not liked, that's it. And I'd have to get more drunk. And so what's great is that this is very specific. In my book, I have this whole paragraph kind of marked, and it says, are you awake, or were you awake? Because it's talking about at night. You know, was I awake to my day? Was I in the moment of my day? You know, and that's kind of the question that I like to ask myself. You know, was I awake today to what I was doing? I mean, when I go through my day, was I really asking, am I there? Am I trying to be there for others? And what are some of these corrective measures I can ask, and that I can ask to my higher power? Because it says, as the last direction in this paragraph, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken, and leave it at that. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Right, moving over to page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
All right, so on this, you know, when my process of on awakening, you know, I don't really start the day, you know, in the blessings of God. I really start the day off like thinking of the craziest stuff and just frustrated and annoyed and whatever. And I'm not in the mood to just attack my day that way. And even when I wake up and it's a great day or whatever, I'm not awake to what I'm doing, right? And I really, really, really have to get in tune with these principles that I believe have worked in my life and kept me sober. And so the focus is on prayer, because I think prayer, you know, in my experience, sets the stage so that not that, you know, things all of a sudden start working for me, but that I have a different perspective of life when I get in tune to that and make a commitment to that. Like, in my prayer, I got to make a commitment to that. And so, you know, And when I talk to my sponsor, we're not too big on motives. There's a lot of iffy motives that have gotten me in odd situations. You know, I haven't had the best motives to come to a meeting, but when I've gotten there, I've gotten a really good message. And so, you know, I'm not too big on those, but what I am big on is surrender. You know, I don't find acceptance as like the biggest answer to my sobriety, but when I etch-a-sketch all my plans for today, because I've already admitted in the first step, I'm not good at making these plans. And it has to do something with this alcoholism. It has to do something with this. And when I surrender that idea, and I go through a list. It's like a list of things that I can just surrender to my higher power. I can offer that up and then make way for the third step prayer. So I say that prayer of surrender, and I say that prayer, that third step prayer. And that puts me in a much better place to address my day. And then continuing on with this, you know, when I first moved down here, I ran into like six different things went wrong, back to back to back to back. And it was just a hard going of life. And there was that burden again. There was that self-hate again. Why am I back here again? Right? And my buddy would give me a ride everywhere. And he said, hey, when you get a car, whatever, you know, make sure you give other people rides. And all right, man, before you leave, man, hey, stay light. And he'd say that over and over, stay light, just stay light, stay light. And I didn't realize he was talking to me about the 11th step. He was talking to me about how do I stay light? You know, we may face indecision, and we may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. So then all my anxiety level, I can drop that. It's saying, hey, you don't have to stress. If you truly believe there's something that there's greater than you, that can handle all your problems, that you believe that God is, you know, then let's rely on this and take it easy. And when I don't do that all the time, you know, it would be insane if any of us did that all the time. In fact, I don't think we would be human, you know. It wouldn't be human to say that, like, oh, I do this 11th step perfectly. And so it's a practice over and over. And I've got to remember to stay light. Not only stay light on others, but stay light on myself in the sense that, like, I don't have to convict myself to a day of awfulness and despair where I can't help anybody because I just have that reverse narcissism of frowning at myself in the mirror. You know, I can actually get in tune with God's despite what I think, feel, or believe and move forward with my day. And that is a dramatic different perspective than what I think is there. And this is where prayer is so essential throughout my day, where I've got to stop. Say, you know what, God, I'm doing it again. I'm doing it again. And you know what? It may be stressful right now. I'm not sure what to do. You know, the shortest prayer that I was told to say is, you know, God help. And when I throw up my hands and do that, that really that puts me in a better place where, you know, I, as time passes, I can be more and more on this plane of inspiration from something greater than me. And that's something I never did in my drinking. Never, ever did. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks, Carl. I think the one piece I like about this is talking about what we do when we face indecision and praying for, you know, God's inspiration. I did a bit of that when I came in, asking, you know, praying for what's, you know, for the first time I was praying, not just praying and asking for things, but asking what is, you know, what is right for me, you know, what allow me to do, you know, your will, not mine today. I feel like in the beginning, a few months sober, I got, you know, just sober enough that I had an idea of the principles and morals of AA, but not sober enough to get my ego in check. So I became this sort of moral superhero, stepping in for people around me and telling them when they were doing things wrong, you know, in their lives, answering, you know, basically teaching other people around me what's the moral and right thing to do. And you know, I found myself in a situation where I noticed something going on, and I thought, you know, this is probably something I shouldn't get involved in. If I talk to my sponsor, I'm sure that's what he would tell me to do. So I'm not going to talk to him. I'm just going to go set this thing straight for these people I know. And it caused me, you know, sort of the most emotional distress I had ever had in sobriety up to that point, you know, less than 6 months sober. I felt one of those basically emotionally hungover. I'd gotten, you know, I was worn out from the trouble I got myself in, basically. And so I learned a lesson there in terms of when I can't figure out what God's will is, or I'm pretty sure I'm going the wrong way, my, you know, a sponsor can act in this role sometimes too, if you give him a call. You know, a little more sober a few years in, I got a call from a detective who was looking into something that I was a destructive drinker, and this was some property that was damaged in a place we'd broken into drunk, you know, years before. They figured out it was me and were calling. And the first thing I thought was, you know, it's probably best to just go tell them, you're right, I did that. What can I do to make it better? Make my amends right away. I should just call them. And before I did that, I thought, well, I might as well, you know, call my sponsor, but I'm sure that's what he's going to say. And he said, no, don't call a lawyer right now. Don't stop talking to them. You know, you have to get a lawyer and make sure you do this right. You know, we'll make amends for this, but let's do it, you know, according to law and in your best interest, so you're not in jail and whatever. You know, there's times that we seek help from outside professionals every now and then. And I did it. I didn't lie to anyone, but I had some help. You know, I called an attorney I knew in AA, and we worked it out together and got it all done in a way that made sense. So, like, basically, this is good. And it's true that my today, you know, my everyday decision-making is miles ahead of where it was when I was drinking. And that's due to, you know, a bit of, you know, time sober and some prayer and meditation over the years. But there are certainly times where I need to step in and chat with my sponsor before making a decision, or just someone else that I trust if that's who's nearby. But and then finally, the other piece on awakening, one thing that I really like is the St. Francis prayer. I don't know if it's a little bit long. I'm not going to read the whole thing right now, but part of it is, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, may I bring love. Where there is wrong, may I bring forgiveness. Where there is discord, may I bring harmony. It's basically talking about being essentially a positive influence in everyone's lives around you that day rather than a negative one. And that's a prayer I like a lot. You know, I don't have the best, the best at consistently praying and having a clear routine morning and night. I've gone through periods of doing that, but I that's one thing I struggle with is staying on that. And one thing I finally did was just joined a home group in Richmond where I live, a Faith That Works, which is 7:30 a.m. every morning. And it's not, you know, that's not something I typically do, but it, you know, forcing myself to go there, I think, makes me a better person. But, you know, there's a St. Francis prayer. We read the St. Francis prayer in the meeting together, and then we do 5 minutes of silent meditation. So I found that at least once a week I could have that morning meditation because I had to at the beginning of the meeting, especially when I signed up to chair it. I had to read it, and I didn't have any choice. So that was my way of making sure I kept on a morning routine. And the days where I did that felt better. Now it's just a matter of getting myself to do that every day, which I will ask for help with. But I'll pass.
All right, thank you. Moving over to page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
Yeah, it is a short one. I think this is something I addressed earlier, which is praying for our own selfish ends. I think that when I first came around to AA, I was forced to as part of a intensive outpatient program I was in. And also my dad had gotten sober. I'd watched him get sober. So I went partly just to make him happy and make him think that I was doing this thing, and also to make the people, you know, basically to get the heat off of my back. And one thing I took away pretty quickly is that people read this book and people do some sort of praying. So I got a big book and I read a few, you know, paragraphs of it and put it down. And then I decided that I would just start praying before I went out drinking, because if I could pray beforehand that everything would go well, or if, you know, maybe I think I remember one time praying that, you know, God, just show me some sort of sign when I should stop drinking. And once I've had that drink that night, I'll stop tonight and then I'll go home. It's really funny, because then I would go off again on a week or, you know, several month long sort of bender, and then look back and realize, oh yeah, I said that prayer to look. I forgot to look for signs like I prayed for. I think that's the, you know, perfect, like, self-will run riot, basically coming into this program and then rewriting it, like, one half of a few of the rules to fit my own will just did not work out well at all. So I'm grateful for these steps and actually finally reading them and doing them properly this time.
There was a sponsee brother explained to me that, you know, back in the 1930s, they didn't have any kind of esoteric definition of meditation. They only viewed it as constructive thought. And that's something simple enough for me to grasp on, is like, I can constructively think about something. And so it says, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. And then they just lay out the third step prayer. freedom from self-will. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. And we're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. So I wasted a lot of time asking why. You know, why am I stuck here again? Why? In my sobriety, why? Why do I put myself in these situations to be hurt? And the why isn't as important. If I truly believe in, that's what I've found in my experience, is that when I fully trust God, that the why gets laid out in front of me much later on in hindsight. But in the moment, my purpose in life is to be of service to others. Any job that I take, it can be of service to others, period. And now I have to. I don't even get to wonder what is the meaning of life anymore, and it makes it a lot more simple. And so now, when I think about that, and I can constructively meditate on that, it makes a very, very simple program. But you know, it's vigorous, because I don't always remember to do that. A lot of times I'm running late and I just, you know, high five God out the door. Praying for my own selfish ends is also me kind of saying that, like, God, I know that you have a plan for me, but I kind of have some ideas. And I have to remember, man, I'm not good at this idea thing, you know. And it's natural. It's natural. I'm going to be, many times I've been very human, like, God, please let me get this job. Please. But when I'm in a really good place, I'm like, man, God, if it's your will, please put me here. And I know that you got a better, you know, plan for me, if there is one, but please put me here. And that's tough. That's tough. That is a different, that is not my normal state. I have to take a minute before I can actually get to that state. But thank goodness this is not a program that they ask you to be perfect at. In fact, to be perfect is inhumane. So anyway, thanks.
All right, further on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select to memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
Yeah, so when I first read this, it was kind of irritating because I was very frustrated that, you know, I went through a lot of different dogma stuff. I went to church camps. I was a junior high pastor. A junior high camp counselor or whatever. And, I went to a theological academy. And through all of that self-knowledge, just, you know, I feel like I've been betrayed by my self-knowledge. I felt very betrayed. And it was nice to, you know, somebody pointed this out, that suggestions, when it says suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Not that, but where. And that's a huge distinction because, I don't have to agree with somebody's religion there. The focus is on the principle that where religious people are right was my fault in pointing fingers. Then I can be of harmony, you know, and make use of what they offer. That's pretty big to me, where now I can stop my, my frustration with that, and I can just find where somebody's right, you know. And I love this openness of the book, where it's like, hey, if you got another morning devotion or anything, do that. Yeah, that's good too, you know. If you have found that deep meditation or whatever that you like to do that sets you right, yeah, do that, please, you know. I think that's really cool that throughout this very specific direction, they leave it open where it's like, you know, experience and actually gain that contact with a God that you can do business with. And, you know, I've found that my higher power will come to me when I take that first step towards Him. Or if there's those of you out there, her, it, thing, that, whatever pronoun you'd like to use. Thanks.
Yeah, I think I've found that in my experience, I don't currently, I'm not currently involved with any religious organization. I know for some folks that's worked really well. And this is another one of those moments where it's worth pointing out that I'm glad that AA is set up the way it is. Like Kyle said, whatever, if you have a prayer or a practice or meditation that works for you, do it. You know, I don't think I would be here today if I was given a packet that was like, these are your morning prayers. You know, you do this one between these hours, and then these are your evening prayers. You know, like given a script and a stack of sheets. Like I could never do that. The idea that it's like, find what your definition of a higher power is, what works for you, and if it is religious, then do that. You know, and I think that's a really cool thing, because people like myself who resented my parents for forcing me to go to a church for years that I didn't want to be a part of, can get this program, and so can people who are, you know, fully active in their churches and love it and all that stuff. It's compatible. You don't have to, you know, it works. So it's universal. I appreciate that. And I did seek out religion as one of my, or a church rather, as part of my, what got me, when I was trying on my own to find a way to get sober. I remember going to a church, you know, a cool church where they have like electric guitars and drums. I thought that would sound awesome. And it was, you know, there were great people there. You know, it was nice, but I started showing up there drunk after a while. You know, it just wasn't, it didn't do it for me, you know. And for some, I think there are maybe some people who can purely do just the religious side of things, and that's what they need. But for me, I needed a program, and I needed a group of people here who understood what I did, a group of good people, you know, also, but people who can also understand the crazy stuff I did and laugh about it and understand it and relate to it. And so that's why I, you know, it's just another moment where I'm glad AA is the way it is, and I'll pass.
All right, thank you. Further on 87, As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does.
Yeah, I like this part a lot, and this is something that parts of the, either maybe the 12 and 12 or other parts of the big book talk about, the restraint of tongue and pen. And I think for me, it happened naturally for me. You know, it wasn't as much of a, like, I needed to read instructions on how to not be, well, in a way I did, but I don't need to, even without reminding myself throughout the day, I find that being sober and working this program and you know, being in a healthy place gives me an extra few seconds before I send an email back to someone or before I respond in a certain way to someone. I've had moments where I've been able to say, I just, you know, someone will do something, say something, and I'll need to tell them that I'll be right back. Like, I need to go walk outside for a minute and I'll come back here, because whatever I'm going to say right now is not going to be a good thing. And I know that, you know, and having that sort of, I think the 11th step and having some sort of relationship with a higher power and some form of prayer and meditation, gives me that, which I didn't have before. Manage political campaigns for a living. And I think that this is one thing that has helped me survive that and do well, is being able to, you know, on a daily basis, be taking on attacks from people or things happening. And you know, I think a lot of folks in this, that world, are extremely reactionary and in one moment can turn hot and take something personal and personally and make some bad decisions. And so being able to have a little bit of a letting that stuff get past you, not going instantly to, you know, excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions is a huge asset, as I'm sure it is for basically nearly every, you know, career I can think of. And that's something that AA's allowed me to do. And I'll pass.
Yeah, so when I drank, I thought there was just going to be one day when it all clicked, when, you know, that weird book that the normies read, all of a sudden I would get that book and I'd be able to read it and be like, all right, I'm going to live this normal life and things are going to be okay. And things are just going to be, you know, it's going to be all right. And when I never got that book or never got that detail, I started to freak out. And then I was just like, well, forget that anyways. You know, I'm just going to do what I want to do. And my whole life became instinct. I react like everything was a reaction. Every single drink was a reaction. It was like, oh, what? This is, you know, this is a celebratory situation? Let's drink. Oh, you made fun of my shoes? Let's drink. You know, oh, there's my show didn't come on because the president's on? Let's drink. You know, like there's always, you know, there's always some excuse of like why I can't attend live, right? And in sobriety too, like I wonder, like, man, I've just been so tired lately. I'm just like mentally drained. And maybe I do have a lot of work. Maybe I do, you know, maybe there's a lot going on. But here's some amazing promises that I really wanted. You know, I wouldn't tire so easily or burn up energy so foolishly if I just said, you know what, I'm not running this thing. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. There's a speaker that said, you know, that's the simplest way to give up my will. I can't do it. I just can't. And there's a release in that, because now, you know, by the time I've gotten to this point, I know there's a program that works. When I've gotten to the 11th step, I know there's a program that works. And when I'm talking to other people in the program, and I'm, you know, I'm talking to my sponsees and my sponsor and going to my meetings and talking to newcomers. For some reason, I just have, there's just, God makes a way. Yeah, there's a guy in Richmond. He has like over 20 sponsees. I'm like, how do you do it? Well, for one thing, he takes multiple sponsees through the book at one time. But he's like, listen, I'm here to help. And you know what? It's not up to me to determine the schedule. God makes a way. And that was so clear to me that I was like, oh my gosh. Well, now I can do anything. If I truly think that there's something greater than me that can really, really take control of my life and make it better. You know, if I can have that belief in better, or if simply I can believe in the principles that are offered in this program, I can move forward with life, no matter what. No matter what, because this is not just a program of like, oh, you get sober and then you just got to deal with things and that's it. No, this is a program of progression as well. And, you know, the one thing, and it says it right here, the one thing that I always wanted when I was, you know, why can't I just have any type of discipline to do anything? And I was so frustrated with that. And it says there's a whole step for this. We let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. And so when I, again, when I think of like my own opinion or my own idea of like, you know, I'm gonna take care of this character defect or I'm gonna, you know, whatever, let me let God discipline me in this way so that I can get out of my own way and allow God to do his work. And you know, then all of a sudden life opens up and I get this energy and I get this flow of things. And I'm not about, you know, getting into arguments. I'm about making harmony. And I'm not, you know, one of the biggest things that I would do is react to excitement. I am very excitable on the most random thing. Like, you know, let's just get excited about it no matter what for no good reason. And I have to watch that. I've got to watch that. And you know what? Your will, God, not mine. And that is, you know, that is huge. And I'm able to be put in a different perspective where I'm able to address life. And that's exactly what I wanted, a different perspective to address life and a way to live it so that I can attend to these things that I've always wanted, you know. And I just think that that's amazing that finally I have that answer. Of that discipline, of where it is, and that it's in these short few pages, an easy direction to follow. Well, I wouldn't say easy direction, but simple direction. Anyway, thanks.
All right. And the last little bit on page 88. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
So I like that, just another emphasis on the fact that it's a program of action, like I said before, and that, which is something that I needed when I was stuck dwelling on the things I'd been screwing up while I was drinking. I was not ever getting better. I was just thinking about all these things I did wrong and then getting drunk and doing the same things again, and that was miserable. And the fact that this is, we're taking action. There's a list of things I can do to move forward. Was huge for me. That's what I needed here. We alcoholics are undisciplined is correct for me. I know, in the sense that I've had great period. You know, I've had my first sponsor who ended up you know, drinking again. He was a great sponsor while he was here, but the one way he had me do the 11th step was to do basically a written exercise at night, running through the things that I may have done throughout the day, basically a sort of journal recap of the day, which, you know, worked for a period of time while I did it. Another thing I've tried before is to have, you know, sort of a 11th step friend, a guy that I would check in with at night and run through these things. You know, have we done this or that? And I, you know, there's still folks I talk to like that sometimes. But the thing that's, like I said, that worked, you know, all of those things I ended up getting out of for some reason. Well, I can't do it tonight because I have whatever, and then all of a sudden I find myself not doing it for weeks. And so the best thing I found was, you know, again, joining a home group for a period of time where I was forced to do it as part of the meeting is one thing that's helped me. But again, that's one of my probably next step for me in AA is to be able to practice these things consistently and not just during tough times or during a period where it's convenient. But I think the next step for me is being able to do it, you know, all the time. I think with how much better things are today, it can only, you know, go up from here if I am to do more of this. And also I think that I know my current program keeps me sober today, but I think I can't anticipate what will happen tonight or tomorrow and could shake that. So you know, that's my work now is doing this in a more disciplined way. But I found that when I do it, things are better. And I'm grateful for these steps and for having a sponsor and for being here today. I'll pass.
Yeah, I guess I got kind of jumped into that line, but yeah, you know, there was a woman that I was very hesitant about getting into a service opportunity, she said something like, you know, you're really working the program when your program becomes inconvenient to you. And it's like, you know, these things aren't convenient. It's not convenient to take time at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day. I mean, there's a lot of hours where I got to get stuff done. I've got to do things. You know, I've got to try and make things happen. And I will short shrift this whole these past few pages just because I've got to get stuff done. Like, that is that, because that's self-will. That's what I've always ran on, and to this day, there's many days where I still run out the door in that self-will. But what's great is that, like, I don't have to burden myself. Like, oh shoot, you know what? I haven't prayed yet. I didn't even give up my will today, and I can take that moment. You know, and I work construction, and so sometimes I'm underneath a house about to put something together, and I'm like, just wanting to just, you know. They say it's progress in this program when you go from suicidal to homicidal, and I'll be underneath the house, just be like, when I get out front of this house, I'm just gonna kill that guy. Like, this is crazy. Like, why? I can't believe where I'm at. What? You know what? This isn't my day anyway. And then I get to stop and say a prayer, and it's not perfect. And sometimes, you know, I don't get to that point until 6 p.m. at night. You know, I'm not able to get to that point until, you know, whatever time of the day, but it's the fact that I do it is when I get to experience this thing, and all of a sudden I get better over time, and you know, that is the blessing in and of itself. And you know, there's action and more action. It's like, what? So you gave me some real serious questions I can ask myself at night, like a whole list. Being able to really construct my day, ask God, you know, for forgiveness, so I can eliminate some of this self-hate and get into this self-love and get into this, you know, get into this world of being helped to others, and ask, you know, how I can constructively think of this day, you know, and that's a lot. That's a lot. When I really look at it, I'm like, man, this is too much. This is too much. But then when I do it, it's, I don't know, less than 5 minutes of my day. And it's all up in my head. And I really just want, I blow it up much bigger than what it should be. But what's great is that this step helps me to get in the perspective of being there for others. Despite my opinions, my reactions, my motives going into situations. And then I can get to the real purpose of this, the spiritual awakening, which is the following step. So anyway, thanks.
All right, thank you. That wraps up step 11. We've got a few minutes left. Does anybody have a question or maybe an awesome step 11 story they want to share? No pressure. No? All righty. So we are going to go ahead and pass the seventh tradition basket. And the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Yes, Kyle.
Oh, hey, my name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kyle.
July 1st through 3rd in Charlottesville, Virginia is the Virginia State Conference of Young People in AA. Registration's $20 right now, and it's going to be a lot of fun with a bunch of different workshops, speakers, and a whole lot of fun. If you're interested in going, please talk to me after the meeting. The website is up, and you can register and also sign up get a room at the Holiday Inn off Emmett Street there as well. And then a few months after that is the International Conference of Young People in AA. There's some cards over there if you'd like the full details on it. It's $35 to register, and that's on a much bigger scale where over 3,000 sober alcoholics get to celebrate sobriety. Everybody's invited. So if you're interested in any of that, please talk to me after the meeting. Thanks.
I have an invite when I'm an alcoholic. My home group, Downtown Young and Sober, off of Freemason Street, is having our Seeds of Growth workshop on July 9th from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. So you can have three speakers, question and answer at the end of it, and we're bringing like tacos and stuff like that, but everybody's welcome.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Casey.
No.
My name is Casey. I'm an alcoholic and
addict. Hey, Casey.
My home group, Big Book and Yank, is having a dinner and a speaker tomorrow night. Bring a dish if you wish. Woo-hoo! Starts at 5:30. That's Eni, and then we have an awesome speaker coming in from what I hear from North Carolina. Her name is Judy, and she starts at 6:15. So please come join us and bring brownies.
Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise their hands.
That's strong. That's real strong.
And newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you? Hi, Dean.
Hey, welcome.
Hey, Tony.
Welcome.
All right, we've got a literature available at the table over here. A variety of pamphlets and flyers and stuff are free, and the books are for sale at cost. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I'll be available up here. Please feel free to come and talk. And reminder, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. So, and why don't we thank our panel again for sharing with us. Thank you. thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, Colonial and 21st, 22nd, somewhere in that area. And can I get someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Come on, haven't you heard enough of him, somebody? Okay. All right, Kyle, take us home.
I'm not even there anymore.
All right. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.
Amen. And close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Works if you work it.